In 2022, I had Zaza's Pizza Co. join me on the podcast for the very first time. After being quite impressed by their pizza at the Chicago Pizza Festival. Well, a year later, after being just over a year into business, they are gearing up for their second location. Why, you may ask? Well, for starters, their pizza is bomb. They're bringing this upscale, artisan New York-style pizza to Chicago, and they're doing well. And they're looking to expand the Zaza. In this episode, we're going to talk about opening up that second location, but I think this information is pretty relevant if you're just opening up even your first location. There's a lot of things to consider. Occupancy, the location, your commute even. So if you are looking to start your pizzeria or you're looking to expand to your second or third location, I really think you ought to give this a really good listen. Or if you're just a fan of learning about pizza from someone who is killing it in the game, you're in for a treat. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And remember to always ask, what's good dough? Welcome, Brett. How are you doing?
Great, man. Super happy to be back on the show. I appreciate you inviting me back.
Honestly, it was a great time last time. We'll try to link the episode in the show notes if you're curious, but we'll definitely dive into your story and, you know, what's been going on with you recently. But before we go any further, there's one question I got to ask you. There's no right or wrong answer. What's good dough?
Good dough is a dough that you put a lot of love into, a lot of thought into, a dough that you're constantly working on, constantly striving to make it better. I think it's great that there's old school joints that stick with one recipe and it works for them. That's great. But in my world, I really just enjoy the constant journey of trial and error and trying out new flours and trying out new ideas and just having fun with it and keeping it alive, you know?
That dedication to ingredients, dough management, and I'm assuming the improvement process is what Adam Kuban categorizes your pizzeria in Chicago as third wave pizza. And I would like to see if you've given any thought to that claim, if you could define it for the audience and let us know your thoughts.
So I think some other places that you can probably fit into that category is like Mama's 2, Lindestry in New York, maybe Feeney. I think the idea is that like you're taking something classic like New York style pizza, but you're sort of, and he hates this word and I hate it too, but you're sort of elevating it to another level by using higher hydrations, organic flours, autolyse, different techniques to maybe amplify the flavor and the texture of the dough, but still kind of going by that traditional size and look of a New York style pizza.
Yeah. And would you say that's pretty spot on to what you're doing?
Yeah, that's kind of exactly what we're doing. I mean, we market ourselves as artisan New York style. So that's pretty much the exact lane that we're trying to be in right now, for sure.
Yeah. When I tried your pizza back in 2022 Chicago Pizza Fest, right, I was instantly amazed. Definitely one of my favorite slices at the festival. And I was just wowed by the quality of ingredients, the olive oil and salt finish, even the toppings. It was just all there packaged up in one beautiful slice. And from what I'm gathering, though, that has since not changed dramatically, but there have been some improvements, right, in the process?
Yeah, I would say for sure. I mean, we still stick to the same standards and ideas when it comes to what we're trying to put out as a product. But our dough recipe itself has changed and kind of updated based on how our business structure works and the amount of volume that we do. A lot of times what you're doing from a dough standpoint can change and can evolve a lot based on the amount of business you're doing, based on the amount of days you're open in your restaurant. So things are always changing based on the circumstances of your business as well. And I'd be happy to talk about how we've, you know, changed and evolved our dough over time, for sure.
Before you do that, can you let folks know what your dough was like back when I first tried it and then walk us through the little changes and why?
Sure. So when I talked to you last time, and I'm going to do my best to remember what we were doing because we're always fucking around and changing the recipe a little bit. But back when we did our first podcast, from what I can remember, we were at 70% or 69% hydration, so a little higher than where we're at right now. We were doing a shorter mix time. So I've always been a fan of under mixing versus over mixing. I'd rather the dough be really light to the bite. I feel like the more you mix it, the more you're going to chew, the more tough it's going to be. So during that period of time, we were barely mixing that thing. Like, we have a Hobart mixer and it would mix for like a total of like a minute, like hardly any time at all. And we were able to kind of shorten the mix time as well by using the auto lees, which, you know, can kind of get that process started without any actual mixing. So during that period of time, we were doing higher hydration than we're doing now. We were doing a shorter mix and we were doing that auto lees, and we were doing a little bit less business during that period of time. And we were pretty much able to dial in exactly how much pizza we were going to sell every night. It was pretty consistent. So, what we found with that dough is, because we use a starter, we use a poolish, and because it's a little bit on the higher hydration side and we use that poolish, and we do such a short mix, it would tend to lose, like the dough ball itself would lose a lot of its shape and fullness, and it would overproof very quickly. Like on day three or four, it's very difficult to work with. Mind you, it would make a awesome pizza if you knew how to work with that super shaggy, super overproof dough. But the problem is, when you get busier and busier, you need to be able to grab a dough ball and work fast and stretch fast and get that shit in the oven ASAP. So that's the problem with working with a dough that overproofs really quickly. So we've made a few adjustments so that it just has a longer shelf life in our walk-in cooler. So what we've done is we've dropped down our hydration just a little bit. It's still a higher hydration dough, so we're more sitting around 67, 68% right now. And we mix just a little bit longer. We still err on the side of under mixing on purpose, but we mix a little bit longer, a few minutes longer, just to get that dough ball a little bit more gluten structure, make it a little tighter. And we're still doing the auto lees, but those two changes that we've done allow the dough ball to stay in its form a little bit longer. So that way we have a dough on day two, day three, day four. It's still workable. Our guys on the line can still pump out pies in a minute, you know, get it into the oven. And that's really important for us to work quick, because our volume has gone way up and we're selling, you know, 200-300 pizzas on a Friday and Saturday. So we need to, you know, work quick, and we need to have dough balls that are easy to work with and quick to work with. So that was the main reason why we've updated the recipe. But as far as, you know, the texture of the dough and the way it bites and the way it eats is indistinguishable, I would say.
I'm glad you added that last part, because that was my follow-up question.
Yeah.
So essentially, tighter gluten with a longer mix keeps it in shape a little bit more. And then the, like, both of those, both the mix and the water contribute to a longer shelf life.
Yes.
That's basically it?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, it's not entirely different. We're using the same flour. The recipe itself is very similar, but just that mix time and the little bit of a drop off in hydration has made a big difference in terms of its shelf life, for sure.
And in terms of shelf life, are you just keeping it in the fridge for X amount of days longer, or is it lasting on the counter a little bit longer? What is the difference in shelf life there?
I would say, I mean, for the most part, we're doing our best to pull out just the right amount of dough in the morning so it warms up. But I'm more so talking about its shelf life while it's sitting in the cooler. Once we walk in on day two or day three, it usually, our goal is to not pull the dough out and then put it back in, because once you do that, you're going to have an overproof dough. So I'm more so talking about that dough that's just been chilling in the fridge and it's still in good shape, you know, on day three or day four.
For someone who's considering dropping their hydration, I definitely have dropped mine in the past. I mean, what are some of the things that you miss from the higher hydration dough, if any? Like, if no one else were able to tell, but you were able to tell.
Yeah. Okay, so, like I said, it's almost indistinguishable in terms of its texture and its flavor, but the crumb structure is tightened up just a tad. When we were at the 69, 70%, we'd have those really big pockets and bubbles in the crust that I do really miss. But we're in an area of Chicago where people like kind of a simplistic plain pizza. People don't really like going for the super wild artisan toppings or the chimichurri pizza I tried doing for a bit that has, like, you know, feta cheese and sliced sausage and pepperoncinis and chimichurri on top. And, like, I thought it was, like, Oh, and charred shallots as well. And I thought it was like the best pizza ever, but like people just still want to go for the plain cheese and pep. And then they're also the kind of people that freak out when they see like super charred bubbles around the crust, those really black, dark bubbles. I love those personally, but the area that we're in Chicago, people get scared of it. People think it's burnt. At the end of the day, as pizza makers, we need to stay true to what we believe in, but we're also running a business and we're not trying to scare everybody away. So compromising is kind of what we're doing a little bit. But myself, I do miss those big open, you know, crumb structures and those bubbles and the black bubbles and the char. Like, I like that. It still happens, but not to the same degree. A little bit less. It's still happening, but not quite as drastically, I would say.
Are you looking to level up your pizza game? If so, I highly suggest that you check out Uni, the unrivaled leader when it comes to pizza ovens. Uni pizza ovens are a total game changer. With the ability to reach up to 900 degrees Fahrenheit, you'll have the power to be able to make the pizza of your dreams. What I love about Uni is their portability and versatility. You can bring them anywhere, or you can keep them on your patio or in your backyard. And you can make a ton of different styles of pizza with it. They're so fun to use. And guess what? You can use them to start your pizza business too. So whether you're a passionate home pizza baker or a budding entrepreneur, you gotta get with Uni. Use the affiliate link in the show notes. That way, you can let my sponsors know that you heard about them through What's Good Dough. Thank you for supporting me and my sponsors. Hey, hey, pizza pal. Did you know a staggering 18% of Americans make a move each year? So even if your business is firing on all four cylinders, you could be waving goodbye to one in every five customers. Oh no, with Our Town America's new mover welcome program, you can seamlessly replace those customers who've relocated. Imagine this, there's a family settling around the corner, seeking out their next favorite restaurant. They're in the midst of creating new routines, and yes, on the hunt for their next bomb slice of pizza. Here's your chance to shine amidst the sea of quote unquote restaurants near me. Now picture this, a tailored, warm, welcome gift arriving at their doorstep precisely when they need it most. And here's the secret sauce. By joining forces with Our Town America, you'll learn how to transform these fresh faces into devoted long-term customers. So, are you ready to dive in? Connect with Susan at 480-678-1366 or send her an email at susan@ourtown.net. That's susan@ourtown.net or 480-678-1366. A lot of pizza makers are using the wrong type of olive oil for their dough. Let me explain. Using commodity olive oil can have a detriment to your pizza, and I'm talking about a huge one. Whether it's rancidity or a nasty smell, you don't want that on your masterpiece. Say goodbye to commodity oil and say hello to Cordo olive oil. Cordo olive oil is the ultimate choice for pizza makers like us. Why? Because they use quality olives, they harvest it at their peak, and they store it securely so that when you purchase the olive oil, it is fresh. They pick their olives at their peak, they harvest it, and they secure it in a safe way. That way, it's ready for you when you make your purchase. The choice is yours. Do you want an explosion of flavor, or do you want that nasty, bitter taste on top of your pizza or in your dough? Anytime you need some Cordo olive oil, use the link in the show notes or DM me, and I'll send you that link personally. I appreciate you for supporting me and my show sponsors.
So those traditionalists that come to your restaurant, are they giving your restaurant a chance compared to like what they grew up on? Like, how do you see that type of person, that avatar that comes into your restaurant?
Yeah, well, there's plenty of people that were actually originally from the East Coast that are now in the city, and those people are big time regulars, and they're very excited to have something familiar to them in their city. But for the newbies and people that haven't really grown up with the style, fortunately, we've been able to kind of make our mark in the town and let people know who we are. And I think we've made so much noise over the past couple of years that people that were at one point hesitant to try our product, you know, were willing to give it a try, and were pleasantly surprised once they actually tried it. You do kind of have to weasel them in. You have to kind of like, you know, it's like trying to get like a mouse to come to you, and they're really delicate and scared, and you have to like really kind of ease them in and be like, it's okay. Trust me, you're going to like it, man. But once they're in the door and they try it, then they're like, oh, okay, I've been missing out, you know? So you just kind of have to get them in the door somehow, some way. And once they try it, they end up loving it, you know, most of the time.
What would you say the ratio is of cheese and pepperoni pies to the funkier style pies? Like,
oh, it's like 90-10. It's like majority, ooh, a good majority are just like the classic. So our biggest sellers are the pepperoni pie, the plain cheese, a gold medal, which is essentially a margarita. And then our Mike's Hot Honey Pie does well. That pie is a little bit more, you know, fun with the ingredients. We have, we actually just switched recently to Rosa Grande pepperoni. We've been trying those out for a little bit. Very nice. And gets topped off with each slice, gets a little dollop of ricotta. We throw some Gotham Greens basil all over the pizza, gets shaved Parmesan, and then some Mike's Hot Honey on the finish. And that pie is one of our biggest sellers as well. So that's one of the more fun pizzas that actually does sell well. But other than that, it really is like 90-10 to, you know, the classics versus like the fun pizzas.
I'm curious to know if you've talked to people like Derek Tung over at Logan Square, where they are more accepting of the funkier types, if what their ratios are. Any idea at all?
No, I really don't know. But I would assume that, again, in like an area like Logan Square, which is one of the towns I just mentioned, they're a little bit more open-minded and accepting of like those funkier pizzas. And like, I know he has a pizza that has like kimchi on it, and they do really fun, cool shit over there. And sometimes I get a little jealous, because I wish people would be a little bit more open-minded to those fun ingredients. But, you know, we're still going to do them at the end of the day. Even if we sell a couple a week, it's still fun for us to make the food we like, you know?
Since we're talking about wishing that you had that type of demographic in your area, you are making a change in terms of location. Are you moving to a location that is going to be serving a population that's more open to these topics?
Interesting question, and I honestly think so. We are opening our second restaurant. We're going to Geneva, Illinois, and I'm assuming that we're going to have a similar situation in that town. It's a great foodie town. There are actually some very, very cool restaurants there, but I think we're going to have a similar effect where we're going to have to ease people in and kind of like encourage them to try the more interesting pies. But I'm assuming in the area we're going into right now, it's more of a family town. The demographic is a little older. So I think it's going to be a similar situation where they're going for the classics more often than not, to be honest. But we're still very excited to be there. Like, there are some great, great restaurants in that area. Like, my last restaurant group that I worked for was Biantrucha Group, and they have a Mexican restaurant right across the street from where we're opening up, and it's some of the best Mexican food I've ever had. There's another really cool restaurant out there called Niche, and they do like really cool artisan dishes and kind of funky plates. So like, there are some places in Geneva that are doing some pretty interesting things with their cuisine. So that gives me hope that the town will be receptive and open-minded to, you know, some interesting topping combinations and whatnot.
Fingers crossed for you, because yeah, I can only imagine how much of an artistic release that is for you to be able to see people appreciate more of your artistic creations.
Definitely. That's a big deal for us pizza makers and previous chefs. You know, we want to be able to do fun things with our pizza and show off our culinary skills, not just put cheese and sauce on our pizza. But at the end of the day, it's about the dough. We put so much love into the dough. So even if you're getting a plain cheese, that's okay. You still get to experience that dough that we work really, really hard on, you know?
That's so true. I mean, you can make the argument that like pizzerias in Tokyo will do two styles of pizza, a marinara and a margarita, and they are very just focused on making the best possible one. So you could even channel that artistic, you know, creation process, not just the toppings, but just making the best cheese pie that you can
make. Yeah. And speaking of that style, that is a style I have yet to try, and it looks so amazing. And I'm super excited to travel one day and be able to try that. Have you tried it a lot yourself?
No, but I'll give a shout out to Not a Pizzeria over in San Francisco. Instagram influencer extraordinary went over there and just documented the entire thing, and I just couldn't take my eyes off of his page. Like, so interesting. I really do want to try it.
Yeah. Yeah, don't they like dimple the edges of the crust and all that jazz?
Dimple the edges of the crust. They do some things with salt, like on the crust and on the deck of the oven or the hearth of the wood-fired oven.
Mm-hmm.
Looks very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I'm very intrigued by that style.
Do they have that style in Chicago? Because I know there's one in California, but it's like in LA, 6 hours away from
you. You know, Chicago is known for having like everything in terms of pizza, but I don't think we have any of that style in the city. So that's you know, if someone's listening to this and thinking about opening a pizza restaurant in Chicago, that might be the next good move. I think that's the one thing we don't have out here, you know.
Not a pizzeria, if you're listening. Let's go.
For sure.
So, Geneva, Illinois. Maybe you can talk about why there and why a second location. Feel free to take either one of those questions.
I'll try to touch on both. Well, I grew up in a little town called Warrenville, so I'm pretty familiar with the Chicagoland suburbs. We grew up there most of our lives. I cooked a lot and was a chef in a town right next door called Naperville. And that is only like 20 minutes from Geneva. And on my days off, I would oftentimes go out to dinner and try out different restaurants in all the suburbs. And Geneva ended up being a place that had a lot of really good restaurants. And it's a super, super cool little area. It's got like these old homes that have been renovated and changed into restaurants, and has like this really like cute kind of family feel to it. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful town. And there's great restaurants over there, and there's a good vibe. And we saw a restaurant space for sale a few months ago, and it looked perfect for what we're trying to do. It was just the right size, just the right amount of seats. Ended up being a good deal for us overall, and we were just like, we should hop on this. We've been talking about and wanting to open a second location for a while. We've pretty much gotten to a place at our first location where we've hired managers. We've hired a general manager as well that pretty much runs the whole show. Shout out to Ben. He's doing an awesome job holding down the shop. So they're pretty much, you know, taking care of the mothership. The first restaurant is pretty much operating on its own. So me and the partners have been freed up to move forward and have been wanting to take on a second project just to bring our pizza to another area, to expand the business, to keep it moving and pushing. And that ended up being the best possible place for us, you know, in terms of the deal that we got and the location. We're very familiar with that area. So it was a lot of green flags for us to go ahead and take that restaurant and move forward with that. Sure.
Many, many congratulations to you and the team. You all have been open for, 2 years? And to
Coming up this almost December.
Yeah, to see that jump is exciting, man. It's just like the fire's there. Y'all are getting some great press. The Instagram is jumping. So from like an outsider's point of view, who's not actually in Chicago, like, you know, all hands to you and all the praise. Like, great job.
Thank you. Thank you. We're really humbled that we've been able to do what we've been able to do so far. We're extremely blessed and fortunate to have had different circumstances that have worked out in our favor. You know, it's a lot of good timing and, you know, a lot of hard work. And luckily, we're just in a really good position right now. We're going to hope that it continues to be that way.
Yeah, I mean, and great pizza too, right? To mention like that. I mean, it's just, it was delicious when I tried it, and clearly it's delicious to others. Adam Cuban, Steve Dolinsky, and a bunch of other folks are just talking about it. So, I mean, the saying goes, like, strike while the iron's hot. Like, y'all are definitely doing that.
Yeah, that's a phrase we've been using ourselves. It's just like, you know, we might as well move forward while we can. Like you said, we're getting the good press, and people seem to be loving the product, which is great. And, you know, we're excited, and we're still energetic about the business, and you know, we're in a place financially where we're able to fortunately make this work. So that's really a lot of the reasons why we decided to open spot number two. It's nerve-wracking, it's intense, it's stressful, but we're also very optimistic.
Talk to the listeners who are looking to open up that second location. You had mentioned it had the perfect size, number of seats, and it was a great deal. Could you define those three things for me a little bit more clearly in terms of like what you were looking for?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, obviously every pizzeria is different. We're not like Pizza Rock in Las Vegas with like hundreds of seats. We're, you know, a little bit of a smaller operation. I was inspired by New York pizza shops when I went to New York for the first time. And since I've been there a few other times, you know, the pizzerias are small. There's a small amount of seats. It's about the pizza. It's not about seating 1,000 people at once. Like, I was really interested in just opening a small place that is manageable in regards to the amount of employees that we need to hire to run the operation, And that comes from a back of house and front of house perspective. I didn't want to open this huge place with bartenders and 10 servers. And for me, that can get chaotic and disorganized. And I that's a little bit much for me. I just wanted to have a small, fun operation with a minimal team. It has grown. We have about 15, 16, 17 employees-ish right now. When we first opened, it was like five of us. So it has grown. But at the end of the day, it's still a small operation. And for us, opening our second restaurant, we wanted to make sure to find a space that enables us to kind of run the same sort of restaurant in such a way where we can probably have the same amount of staff running the show, maybe one or two hosts on a busy day in the front, about four or five guys in the kitchen on a busy night. And that's pretty much it. We wanted to be able to pretty much copy and paste our current strategy in regards to the amount of staff that we have, the way we run the restaurant. Some of it is self-service. People throw out their own plates. People order their own food during lunchtime. That helps us minimize the amount of employees that we need. And that just helps us watch our labor. And in regards to seating, we can seat about 50 at the new restaurant. And in our first restaurant, we can seat about half that, about 25. So I would say 25 to 50 is a good range for us. We're getting into a place where we're trying to seat 200 people. That's a little bit beyond what we're looking for. That's a little bit too big of a restaurant. So the size of the restaurant itself basically allows us to have a certain amount of staff to be able to take care of our busy nights. And that allows us to pretty much copy and paste what we're doing at spot one so that we can just repeat it at spot number two. I mean, we have the systems in place. We have our cleaning procedures, our opening and closing procedures when it comes to the restaurant. We already have our products in place with our companies that we order from. We already have our recipes figured out. So, I mean, opening the second restaurant is a breeze compared to the first one because all those things we didn't have figured out. So really for me, if you're going to open a second restaurant, I think it's important to try to somewhat stay close to your same the same strategy you had when you opened your first restaurant, so that way you can just kind of take what you already have built and just repeat it over and over again.
It kind of like goes to show why Taco Bells kind of look like each other, right?
It's exactly.
Like if you open one Taco Bell, they're going to try to make it the same shape and the same seating capacity, so they can have a very good understanding of what they're going into.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, there's a few variables in Geneva. The restaurant is a little bit more, it feels a little bit more like fine dining. It feels nicer, almost a little bit more like a Lucali's versus like our first restaurant feels a little bit more like a casual fun, like almost like Joe's, you know. But overall, we're not quite there yet in terms of designing the space. We're going to, you know, put in a soda cooler. We're going to maybe put up a mural on the wall. We're going to try to make some updates to the feel and the vibe of the restaurant so it still feels pretty much the same. So there might be like a slight bit of variance, but for the most part, the way it feels, the way it looks, the way we run the show is going to be very, very similar. So that's what's going to make it easier for us to open our second spot.
Why? And we'll get back to the great deal later because I do want to dive into that. But and maybe this just came with the great deal, but like it was there an interest in more seats because it seemed like the trend was to find places that had a smaller inside eating area footprint.
Well, the goal with the restaurant in the first place and when we opened our first restaurant, the goal was to just focus on you know, limited seating and doing a lot of takeout. That's what we were doing, and we've learned how to do takeout very well. So in our first restaurant, the majority of our sales come from takeout and people coming to pick up their pizzas. But we found that when we started getting busier and busier, we weren't able to seat people when they were coming into the restaurant. So we've almost gotten to a place where we've outgrown our restaurant, our first restaurant. So I think that's where the desire to have maybe a little bit more seating comes in because, you know, it always is disappointing to turn someone away or tell them that they're going to have to wait for an hour to sit down to eat a pizza. I would like to get into a place where we have our system set up to where anytime you walk in, like you don't have to wait much more than 20 minutes to get a table.
Gotcha.
If not, I want to be able to seat our customers right away. And, you know, that's just sometimes a frustrating thing when when you can't seat someone and you don't have enough space. So people have complained online and left us bad reviews, like, the food's great, the pizza's awesome, but the place is so small. And it's like, you know, that's a little frustrating because there's like nothing we can do about that. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah.
But hopefully that issue will not persist with the second restaurant because there's a little bit more seating, a little bit more room.
Heard. Okay. Yeah. So great deal. I'm guessing Chad, I'm assuming Chad, the real estate guy, had a little bit something to do with finding this place or not?
Yeah,
or
definitely.
Off? Yeah.
Okay. Well, we were both looking online, but at the end of the day, I trust him to take a look at the numbers and he handles most of the finances. If anyone's listening, not sure who Chad is, that's my brother, my business partner. And we pretty much do everything together in regards to running this place along with our mom and our stepdad. They're also partners as well. But for the most part, me and Chad are the faces of the restaurant. I pretty much handle all the cooking and the kitchen related things. And Chad helps me with the back end and the financial part of the restaurant and the overall business management, which is huge. Like having a good team and having someone to handle those things is great because I'm awful when it comes to that kind of stuff. Like I just want to make pizza, man. Like that's what I do. That's what I know how to do. Like all this paperwork stuff that I'm doing right now, like I did not sign up for this, man, but it comes with being a business owner. But thank God I have Chad because he helps all of that go a lot smoother. So yeah, we were looking online, like Biz Buy Sell and whatever other websites they have just for like commercial real estate. And this restaurant popped up and I'm not going to disclose the price, but overall, like with the amount of seats it has and the area that it was in, we were like, okay, this is a hop on it right now kind of a deal. And I trust my brother when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I just feel like so far with Zaza's, just amazing things have just fallen onto our lap. And sometimes we get lucky because we were really not looking in Geneva at all. Like we were looking in Naperville, which is another town 20 minutes away from Geneva. But there was something in us. And we're just like, yeah, let's just peek. Let's see what's going on in Geneva. We look up Geneva and the first restaurant for sale that popped up was this place. And it was the only place in Geneva for sale on this particular website. So if anybody is looking for a good place to look for spaces, Biz Buy Sell is oftentimes what we go to as a resource. And it's a really good place to look for commercial real estate.
Okay. Is there, aside from price, is there anything else you can help the listeners with in terms of just considering it? What a great deal looks like.
Sure. I mean, I think it's important to, first of all, take a look at the area that you're moving into and pay attention to the restaurants that are in that area. Like, are they successful? Are they doing well? Are they doing good business? Is there good food in that area? Because, you know, people look at other good businesses and other good restaurants as competition. I look at it as a positive. Like, I want to be a part of an area that has a thriving food scene. So that's what I consider important, and that was happening in Geneva. So for the price that we saw that it was selling at in the area it's in with the up-and-coming food scene that they do have, that's what made it a better deal as well. And then I think it's also really important before you make any type of final deal, go into the space, you know, see what kind of sales they were doing, you know, ask those kind of questions, and then take a look at how well they maintain the space. Because our first restaurant was such a good location. It was such a good deal, but it was also a disaster. And we had to deep clean it like 5 days in a row. Like it was disgusting. This current restaurant was maintained and kept so clean. And it's a pristine, beautiful kitchen. So that just, that made it even more attractive to go into the space because he took such good care of the restaurant. And that alone makes the restaurant, in my eyes, more attractive for the customers. We also went and dined at the restaurant before they closed down and their food was delicious. And they had a ton of people eating in the restaurant. So it was important for me to understand that, like, is a restaurant going to fail here, or does the guy who's selling the restaurant actually want out because of he has something else going on in life or he's ready to move on? Like, it's important to ask the seller why they're selling, because I mean, if you really believe in yourself and you move into a good area, you can buy a restaurant space that is failing and turn it around, because that's what we did with our first restaurant. The restaurant that was there previously was doing awful. But that is a big risk, and you're better off, for the most part, talking to whoever's selling a restaurant and seeing their numbers and seeing if they're successful. If they have good numbers and they're doing relatively well, that is another really good sign, for sure.
Just for clarification, was the restaurant, quote-unquote, failing and had bad numbers? Or
No, not at all. Okay. So the restaurant was doing well, but the owner just had a lot of life things going on, and he's having a kid, and he's just ready to move out of the fine dining scene and owning a restaurant, which is stressful and it's hard. And he was in a position where he was doing a lot of the stuff himself, and running the kitchen every day. And I think he was just pushing himself a little too much. And from what I understand, he was just ready to get out of the space. But I mean, they let us look at their sales. They let us look at what they were doing in regards to numbers. And for how often they were open, they were like open like 4 days a week from like 5 to 10. They were like hardly even open, but still their numbers looked very good. So that was another really important thing for us to consider and look at.
Yeah, this was a great bit of insight from you. I gathered a couple of things. One, if the restaurant is clean and well-maintained, it either means that the building was new to begin with and the owner managed to keep it new, or it was, you know, well taken care of because they had the revenue and the profits to reinvest in the place, or at least continue to maintain it. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that sometimes people look for quote unquote distressed properties or distressed owners. They just want out, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where the deals are to be made, based on what you're saying, right? Like, look for the person who really wants to get out of there, and maybe they're willing to sell for cheaper because they just want out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, if you really believe in your product and you think you can make it work in any particular area, like whatever reason they're selling, like don't let that hold you back. I just think those are green flags to look for. Like if you're looking at a restaurant that was doing relatively well, but they're just done and they're ready to move on, that to me is a green flag. That's a good sign. But at the end of the day, you can still find a space where maybe they were failing, maybe they were doing bad, but maybe it wasn't the right food for that area, or maybe they weren't running it properly. So this really isn't a one-size-fits-all situation, but these are just green flags that I look for when I'm moving into another restaurant space.
Beautiful. Yeah. How far is it from your current location?
So we're looking at about an hour-ish with traffic, and maybe an hour 30. So I'm going to be doing a lot of commuting the next couple months for sure.
Oh, no. Yeah, okay.
It's going to be a good back and forth. But, you know, I have family that live out in the suburbs, so maybe I'll have to crash once in a while at their place after a long, busy shift. Hopefully, very long, busy shifts. You know, hopefully when we open up the place, we'll just be jumping right off the beginning of the opening.
I'm glad you said that, because two of my questions are, when do you open?
So we're shooting for December. That is the goal.
Awesome. And then what is your marketing / launch plan, aside from having Mama Zaza DM everybody? Because I know she's already doing it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. She's going nuts on the gram, yeah, for sure. She is definitely like a big part of our PR, you know, getting the word out.
She does a great job.
Yeah, she does a great job. She's very active on the platforms, and she'll go out of her way to make sure people know that we're coming. So that's a big one. We just put up some advertisements on the window to make sure people know, like, we're moving into the restaurant space. Get ready for us, Geneva, like some pictures of our pizza. Like, that should help as well. Obviously, the social media approach is what we're doing now. We just opened up a Zaza's Geneva page on Instagram. Go follow. If you would like, I highly recommend checking it out, because there's going to be some awesome updates there and some delicious looking pizzas on your feed. So check us out there. In addition to the social media stuff, though, we are trying to kind of get out into some of the festivals and things going on in Geneva and St. Charles, which is a neighbor town. They have this huge festival this weekend coming up called the Scarecrow Fest. There's like 50,000 attendees, and a bunch of kids and families go there, and a bunch of businesses will set up like a personalized scarecrow, and there's a contest. So we're going to make a scarecrow with a bunch of pizza stuff going on. He's going to be wearing like a pepperoni jacket and stuff like that. And we're going to be giving out free slice cards to people in the area. So a lot of old school face-to-face marketing as well, just shaking hands and meeting people is what we're doing as well. So we're kind of doing everything we can to get the word out, you know?
I love that. That's tight. Yeah. That's a great, anything else? Cause I thoroughly enjoyed what you just said. Any other things?
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much it. I mean, we're looking at, another pumpkin festival thing that's happening this Saturday in Geneva. I think we're going to continue to try to be a part of any festivals that are happening in that area, just to let our brand be known. We're going to try to, you know, be in that area with all the gear on, you know, wearing the Zaza shirts, wearing the Zaza's hats, just handing out free slice cards to the local businesses, continuing to push hard on social media and, And that Mama Sue's a PR. I mean, that's really the big one for sure. Those messages and the people that everyone that she reaches out to. I mean, she really does a great job letting people know who we are and what we're doing. So I think those three things are really our biggest focus in regards to marketing and letting people know who we are.
As we slowly come to an end here, I do want to leave a good amount of time for this question, and we can dive in a little bit deeper, but if needed. But what's one mistake in pizza business or life that you think people should avoid?
For me, I think taking care of myself on a mental level, on a physical level, has been the biggest thing I can do to maintain energy and motivation to continue to run this business. I think a lot of business owners and a lot of people in the restaurant space in general tend to fall into despair and overworking and alcoholism and drug usage and staying up late and having shitty sleep schedules. And it's hard to avoid all those things. It's just a part of the lifestyle, and it's just a part of what we do oftentimes. But if you're able to take care of yourself, go to the gym, go to therapy, spend time with your family and friends on your days off, like try to have somewhat of a life balance, I think you're going to be better off as a boss. You're going to be better off as a manager. You're going to be better off as a restaurant worker. Take care of yourself, and you're going to come off as a more positive energy in the space that you're in, no matter what you're doing, whether you're an owner, whether you're just a manager, whatever you're doing. It's hard to do, but taking care of yourself, at least for me, has been a game changer in regards to my overall energy and what I bring into the room when I'm around my coworkers and my employees. It just gives you a better headspace and allows you to be the best version of yourself so that they can look up to you and continue to be motivated by what you do.
Was there a point in time where you weren't taking care of yourself throughout this journey and process?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of business owners will relate to this, but when you first open your very first restaurant, I mean, you eat, sleep, and stay at that place all day 24/7. Like, you just live there, basically. Like, I was working shifts till 2-3 in the morning and then getting back there at 8 in the morning, not getting any sleep, staying up all night, trying to figure out what I can do to improve the restaurant, or, you know, just being obsessed about different details of the recipes and whatnot. Like, I wasn't taking care of myself at all. And if you open your first restaurant and you're just getting into the space, I mean, it's hard to recommend doing anything else, because sometimes that's just what it calls for. But I mean, if you're lucky enough to get to a place where you get that work-life balance, like, really take advantage of that and really take care of yourself as much as you can. And honestly, like, if you're lucky enough to be able to close down for maybe more than just one day a week, maybe close down Mondays and Tuesday, take those 2 days of rest. Take those 2 days to recoup so that you're ready to go on Wednesday for that work week. Like, a lot of people, you know, might not have the luxury of being able to do that. So it's tough. It's a tough conversation, because there's going to be people listening to this saying, like, I wish I could do what you do. I wish I can take care of myself. I wish I had time to exercise or spend time with my family, but I can't. Like, I live here. So I want to be careful about how I say this, but if you get to a place in life where you're blessed and lucky enough to be able to have a little bit of extra time in one way or another, whether you design it yourself or whether it happens by fate, just do your best to take care of yourself, because it's going to make you a better person. It's going to make you a better manager. It's going to make you a better owner. It's just going to give you a better headspace overall.
That's beautiful. When did you find the time, or what clicked in your head that something needed to change? And when was that?
So really, my life took a big change when we started doing a lot of business, when our volume went up, when we started getting very busy. Luckily, we were in a place to start hiring managers, and we were in a place to start getting more and more staff into the restaurant so I can maybe take 1 or 2 days off a week. And that's kind of how it started. So I was in the place every single day, just, you know, working my ass off, no really time to exercise or take care of myself, just sort of, you know, in that restaurant all day, every day. And then luckily our sales started picking up. We started doing enough business, and I was like, you know what? Like, the numbers are looking good. Like, we should be able to hire a manager right now to help delegate some of these responsibilities. And really, that was the biggest thing for me, is taking some of my responsibilities and learning how to delegate them, teaching my managers how to do the food orders, teaching my managers how to open and close the restaurant, giving them a pair of keys so they can come and open the restaurant without me, and I can maybe, you know, sleep in 1 day a week or something like that. And then suddenly you start learning how to delegate more and more tasks onto your managers and your other employees. And then you put yourself in a position where you can start to oversee the business and you're not in the thick of it anymore in regards to working in the kitchen. And when I got to that point, you know, I was able to actually take some time to be in the restaurant, make sure everything's okay, and then also still make myself dinner at home at the end of the night. And I think that's like the dream for a lot of business owners, is like to open a space and for it to be successful and to be able to maybe someday have a family and eat dinner with them every night. You know, like I could have never imagined being home at 5, 6 p.m. 5 years ago when I was working every day as a cook. So I think that was one of the big goals for me as a restaurant owner and a business manager. I just really wanted to put myself in a position where I can maybe have a family someday. And it's very difficult to have a family when you're in the restaurant space. So that was a big goal of mine. So learning to delegate responsibilities and have managers help you out a little bit so you can start taking care of yourself was one of the most important things I've ever done with this business. I got to a point where I hated it. I'm not going to lie. I got to a point where I couldn't take much more in terms of how hard I was working. And then thank God things changed, you know?
Damn. I love that. I love what you said. No, yeah. I mean, you said two things. It's either, you know, by fate or by design. And like, if you happen to not get lucky, there's definitely some design that most people can do. Like, I understand.
Yeah.
I want to be careful about how I say this too, but yeah, some people are in the thick of it all the time. But if you can take the extra caution or time to really think, how can I readjust my schedule so that I can create that space for me to breathe and relax and cook dinner?
Or even like one thing you can do is if like you're still in the restaurant every day, like at the very least, find someone that you trust with a pair of keys that can at least close down your restaurant. And then after you get through the rush, go home and relax and have your employees that you know, work so hard for you and that you pay well, you know, let them close down the restaurant, let them clean, let them, you know, do the closing procedures when you go home at 8:30, 9 p.m. after the rush and give them a pair of keys as long as you trust them to do that. Like, that's one thing you can do. And maybe you can get a few extra hours of sleep at least. Like, little things like that can make a big difference too.
Yeah, because the alternative to that is that you start hating your job. You maybe want to get out of that business like the guy from Geneva wanted to do, and or maybe you had other life goals like starting a family and you won't get to do that. I mean, to be honest with you, you know, my wife and I, like, I feel like I've told people that I didn't want to get into the restaurant, but lately I have been. And I think one of the conversations that me and my wife have are like, can you really sacrifice those initial amounts of time with your daughter? Right? Are you prepared to work the long nights if things don't take off right away? And so like, that's one of the things that's definitely holding me back. And so I totally relate to what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. It can be really scary. And I know cooks and chefs that have children and families and it's difficult for them. It can be. I think those things are good to calculate and try to figure out as good as you can before you make that jump, for sure. But, you know, there are things you can do to make sure you have a balanced life. It's not easy, but there are definitely things you can do, 100%.
What are the things that have helped you the most?
Well, like I said, obviously, like, I was in a good enough position and lucky enough to be able to delegate that responsibility. You know, do what you have to do at the end of the day. Like, if you need to exercise in the morning or if you need to be with your kids, then don't open up for lunch every single day. Maybe on Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Thursdays, you open up the restaurant at 2 and you spend those mornings with your family and or you exercise, you take care of yourself, and then you open up for dinner service. So design the business around your life, you know, really at the end of the day. Make it work for you. You know, this is your business. This is what you chose to do. So you should never have to feel in debt to your customers or in debt to your business itself. Like, obviously you want to make your customers happy, but at the end of the day, this is your business and you should design it the way that works for your life, you know? So that's just like one thing you can do is just move around your hours a little bit or just shut down on Sundays. If that's a day you like to relax, like, don't be open on Sundays. Sundays can be a good day for pizzerias because of Football Sunday, you know, it's good for us, but at the end of the day, it's important to design the business around your life, not the other way around.
Yeah. I'm getting to a point in this podcast where I'm thinking like, nobody's, you know, if they're not into this type of advice, they probably would have dropped off already. But like, so I want to be like super real. Like, if you're the type of person who wants to spread out the work and have a lighter load 7 days a week, do that. But if you'd rather like have Sunday off and then work your fucking ass off 6 days a week just so that you could have that Sunday off, mm-hmm. like you have that option.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's really just thinking like, what works? And yep. I really am a fan of lifestyle design. It takes more thought. Sometimes it requires you to like step back and really think. Mm-hmm. But like, if you don't make that time, like shit, you're going to be screwing yourself up. So
totally. I mean, it's just not sustainable in my opinion. There's some people, I mean, you know, there's always exceptions. I think about like Gio, who runs Luigi's in New York. That guy is in there but he loves it. You know, he loves it. He doesn't get tired of it. His family is there. Like, his nephew is there. His sister's there. Like, he's got family there with him all day long, and he loves it, you know? So for some people, they want to be in it all day long. Just, again, just do what works best for you, you know?
Mm.
Do what works best for you at the end of the day.
So, fun fact, I've been doing therapy, actually, for the last few months, and one thing that I've discovered is people find ways to recharge differently. And for me, I recharge by catching up on work. Like if I am like on projects that I'm working on, if I were to take a day off from my W-2 job, what I want to do is catch up on projects versus just sitting on the table and just like, or sitting on the couch and watching TV. Cause that is what would stress me out. And so I think it definitely helps for folks to figure out what recharges them, because at the end of the day, some things can be draining, even the things that we love, but we need to like charge that battery up.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, everybody's unique. Everybody's different. Whatever you need to do to design your life, to have a little bit of balance so that you put yourself in a good headspace, like that's an important thing to consider every day, especially as a business owner.
Love it.
Yeah, man.
It could be pizza, business, life, or anything. What do you want to leave the audience with today?
Come check us out. Zaza's Geneva, second location. Let's go. Very excited. Very, very excited. Hopefully we get a lot of people coming in the door when we open up. So yeah, that's just what's on my mind right now, is that second location. I really hope people show some love and some support, and we continue to make strides with our business, man.
December's right around the corner.
Yeah, we got a lot of work to do, man. That's the goal. We'll see what we can do, but that is the goal.
Ooh, quick little tidbit for the people who stayed till the end, but like, what's the hardest thing about opening a second restaurant?
Well, first of all, let me say opening a first restaurant is 1,000 times harder. Let's just say that, because when you're not used to going to the city and getting all the paperwork done and getting all your permits done and figuring out your cost structures and paying for equipment, like that can be such a disaster. But the second time around, luckily, we're just sort of doing the same thing all over again. But the most difficult thing, I think, is for me, waiting on other people to get the things done that you're trying to get done. Because at the end of the day, like, you can be on it and you could be making phone calls like, I'm ready to get this piece of equipment, I'm ready to get this electrical work done, I'm ready to do this and that. But you can call someone and they don't answer. You can email someone and say you're ready to go, but they don't answer. So we're kind of not able to completely control everything ourselves. And that's like the most annoying part. Like, we've been trying to get a hold of an electrician, you know, for like a week to be able to like get these ovens into our space. And that's been a pain in the butt. So little things like that are out of your control really can be frustrating when you're trying to open a restaurant space. Like, we're trying to get going, you know?
Did you just summarize The Bear season 2?
You know, I haven't even watched it yet. Does that happen?
Or? Oh, no.
Yeah, don't ruin it for me.
It does. I'm sorry. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But yeah, that can be very frustrating, like things that are out of your control, and like waiting for that health department visit so that you're approved. Like, you know, all those little things can be tedious and frustrating. Like, I like being open and making pizza and just being in the middle of it. Like, opening the restaurant is annoying. Yes, there's a lot of paperwork to be done. There's a lot of little nuanced things that take forever. So it's not a blast. It's not fun. It's not the part of my job that I really thoroughly enjoy, but we're going to get there and it's going to be worth it. You know,
Brett, thank you so much for being on the show, man. Shout out to the entire Zaza's team. I am looking forward to your guys' opening, and I really wish you all the success. I recommend anybody make the trip out there, You're not going to be disappointed. You got some great products, and I wish you all the success, for real, for real.